This is the last interview episode of the year. We appreciate Jonathan Fritz of Hopewell Brewing for joining us, and we appreciate you for listening to our episodes throughout the year. Thank you so much. Enjoy your holidays. We will be back with the new segment on Monday, and of course, then back at the new year, we got some NA brands. We're going to start off great and sober for dry January. Why don't you follow us on all of our social medias? It's Better on Draft on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And of course, Better on Draft on our brand new TikTok, which we'll start using a little bit more throughout the holidays, as well as you can find out what we were drinking by friending us on Untapped Bod Podcast, BODPODCAST. Don't forget to check out all of our sponsors, Zutuna Liquor in Rochester Hills, just south of M59 on Rochester Road, North Center Brewing over in Northville, Michigan, just south of Baseline Road, and PCI Brandcraft. That's at PCI Brandcraft on Instagram and Facebook. Follow them for all of your swag needs. Don't forget to like us and listen to us live 7 p.m. Eastern. We'll be back January 7th at betterondraft.tv.
Whether your beer is in a bottle, can, or glass, kick back and relax. It's Better on Draft.
Welcome, everybody, to the final episode. Well, not news episode, but the final episode of the Better on Draft podcast, episode 276. My name is Ken. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it. We hope you have a great holiday upcoming. I hope you are planning to stay safe. Don't drink and drive, and remember to drink amazing craft beer. And that is everyone's favorite gift. You know, if you're trying to figure out what to buy for someone, buy them some craft beer. For me, as you guys know, I am still getting over the COVID, so I'm not tasting anything, so I wound up drinking Hoplark's experimental 008 hops that I've got. Dan, what do you got over there?
Ooh, I am double fisting it since we don't have Nick here yet, and I'm mixing things, and it's a little bit different than I normally do. I've got a 90 Schilling from Odell in one hand, got a glass of Marion from Superstition in the other.
Awesome. You're picking up the slack that I'm providing, but we do have a guest in our Zoom studio. Why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us who you are, where you work, and what you do.
Hey there. My name is Jonathan, and I own Hopewell Brewing Company in Logan Square in Chicago, Illinois. I am drinking, jumping right into that, shamelessly drinking our own beer to promote it. I'm drinking our first pils, which is our year-round pilsner that we make. But I do have three other beers queued up right next to me, depending on how tonight goes. And I'm drinking it out of my lovely Burial Willie glass, which I just got on vacation this year. And it's my favorite drinking glass. But Hopewell has been open for just north of 5 years in Chicago and just started sending beer to Michigan basically right when the pandemic started. So beginning of 2020.
So you began distributing. We know you go through Oath, which are friends of the show. Obviously, if your beer store does not carry it, tell them to contact the folks over at Oath to get it for sure. What are some of your distro beers? What can we find here in Michigan right now?
Yeah, sure thing. So first of all, Oath is great. It was the first time that we sent beer out of market because in Illinois, we're self-distributed. In Illinois, is just every state's distribution laws are a little bit different. But in Illinois, we can distribute a pretty significant amount of beer. So we deliver to somewhere around 400 accounts in like the greater Chicagoland area, all ourselves. We have our own warehouse. So whenever we start to think about working with a distributor, you know, it's a big shift from our guys delivering the beer directly to our customers so that we can get direct feedback. So when we first start thinking about who do we want to work with, it was great meeting Oath. And I think we talked to Aaron and Scott for over a year, maybe 2 years. Maybe they'll listen to this and correct me. But we talked to him for a really long time before we decided, like, yeah, we want to work with with these people. And it feels a lot like they are our self-distribution wing in Michigan, because they give us so much feedback from the accounts in Michigan. I've been out a couple times to visit and had a really great time visiting. We did an event at Collect. We've done an event at 8 Degrees Play-Doh. Western Market carries a lot of our stuff. To answer your question, I've been dodging it. I guess. But to answer your question, one of our big year-round beers that we send is called Ride or Die, which is a pale ale. It's a great pale ale, 5.5%, mostly Simcoe on the hops, a couple other sea hops on the back end to round out the flavor. And when we first started sending beer to Michigan, I was like, I don't know if an out-of-market pale ale makes sense. Like, I don't know if it makes sense to just send our specialty stuff, because we do a lot of wild beer. We do a lot of barrel aging. We'll do a lot of one-off beers. But Ride or Die has really taken off as our lead brand in Michigan. We're selling more than I was expecting, and it's great because I think it's a great beer. I should have a can that I'm drinking next to me so that I can show it off and sell it. But, you know, we're a small self-distributing brewery. Our forte is making beer. It's not the self-promotion aspect of it, I guess. But outside of that, we do a lot of good business in Michigan with our wild and barrel-aged beers. So we have a series called Neon that is all fruited sours that are not barrel-aged, but they are co-fermented with fruit. And our blend of Brett and bacteria that gives it a really nice complex flavor. And then we sell them in 750 milliliter clear bottles. So they're really striking on the shelf. I know Western Market's always got a bunch of those. 8 Degrees Plato's always got a lot of those. Off the Wagon has those. And that's been really fun to send out of state, because Michigan is still really local to us. We end up working with a lot of Michigan fruit farms on those beers. But we make a lot of everything. We really do run the gamut in terms of, we're the only brewery that I know in Chicago that made an 80 shilling last year. And it's really cool to be of a size where you can be making those styles and selling through them, and they sell well, that we, you know, grew up drinking. Like, we just made an ESB, we made an 80 shilling. We'll do the traditional sort of pub styles. We've got a really great hazy IPA program that I'm really proud of. Our pilsners are off the hook. And then, like I said, Ride or Die has been kind of a constant for us that's doing really well. So that's a really long answer that kind of means we make everything, and we're self-distributed, so there's a home for everything.
It's a great answer. Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, no problem. Real quick, just so people know, when you think Chicago, obviously there are different areas of the city that you think about. You know, you get your downtown, you got where the Bean is, where the Navy Pier is. Where is Logan Square for people who are going to Chicago?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I think compared to Detroit, and my wife grew up in the Detroit area, we love visiting. It's a different city in that Chicago is so based on what neighborhood you're in, which is why I think even when I introduced us, I said Hopewell's in Logan Square in Chicago. So Logan Square, in terms of other breweries, is where Revolution first started out, in Logan Square. So we're about a mile away from the original Revolution location, and then a mile in a different direction away from their now production brewery. So it's a great neighborhood, five or so miles northwest of downtown, where like the Bean is, where you were talking about. But we are right on the train. So if you're visiting Chicago, we are directly off the Blue Line. The Blue Line is the one that goes northwest. There's also the Red Line goes north-south. But we are directly off the Blue Line, which was always important to us because we wanted to be in the city. I wasn't interested in opening a brewery just, you know, in an industrial park. I wanted to be somewhere where you don't need a car to come visit our tap room. People who work for us don't need a car to come work in the brewery. They can live in the city. They can take the train. And we are literally a block away from the Blue Line stop in Logan Square.
Fun little plug. We're actually having Revolution on here on January 14th.
Oh, really? Who's coming on?
I don't know the name of the person yet. By that, I mean it's somewhere in my email, and I just don't know it yet. when we do our show and we prepare for our show, we don't, you know, things can change. So I'm not going to stress and try to figure out who's on the show or what's going to happen. You know, I just wait till the week of and then we figure out what's going on. But yeah, Revolution's going to be on the 14th of January. So we are excited. But how did you get into the beer industry? What brought you into wanting to open up a brewery?
Well, before I do a good job selling my own beer, I want to do a hearty plug for Revolution. They are our neighbors and significantly bigger than us. I mean, they're probably 100 times bigger than us in terms of what they produce. But they are always down to help us out in terms of production. If we have trouble finding can lids, if we have trouble sourcing anything, if we need like a bag of grain, Revolution's always down to help us out with that. And their barley wine, VSOJ, is the absolute best barley wine in the country. So before I talk about myself, I want to give them a hearty plug. I hope you have a great conversation with whoever you're talking to over there. But I got started, actually. So I own Hopewell with two partners, Samantha and Steven. We met in college. We went to University of Illinois. It's the state school in the middle of Illinois. And we met because we all liked drinking beer. And the three of us started homebrewing together. You know, it's kind of a common story where you start homebrewing together, you dream about opening up a brewery, and then we were in college. So obviously we didn't open a brewery right away. We all kind of went our separate ways. And I ended up having a career in more of the sales side of things because I thought, okay, I know that I'm good at this side of what I can offer to our eventual brewery. So I sold everything from hot dogs to rental cars. And Steven, who was at the time in the home brewing days, the most talented brewer, went to brewing school at UC Davis. And then Samantha had a nice career in nonprofits. And so how that translates to today, we were always talking about Hopewell, and 10 years after we graduated, we ended up opening it, is that I kind of head up our self-distribution and distribution in general wing of the business. Steven obviously heads up the production end of the business, and Samantha heads up the operations and the marketing ends of the business. And I think like what became evident to us as we were thinking about opening up Hopewell is that, you know, there's a ton of breweries. Like when we first wrote our business plan, there were three breweries that we referenced in Chicago, and now there's over 200 in the greater Chicagoland area. So we knew that we had to think more about what kind of company do we want to be? What was our eventual goal? We're not trying to be a huge manufacturing company. We want to retain what's really fun about beer, which is trying to make different things and making exciting stuff that we just want to make, that we think that we want to drink that might not be available to us. And we want to be a good place to work. So we tried to build our company in a way that we're a good place to work from the tap room to the brewery side, to the sales side, to the distribution side. And that was that sort of the biggest push on the back end of opening up a brewery. Obviously, opening up a brewery in concept is easy. You're making beer, people love beer, so you're selling beer. But the back end and the heart of the business is really in what kind of company are you, and how are you as an employer? And that's what we've tried to focus on as we've grown as a company. And we obviously didn't open up doing everything perfectly. And I try to remember that at every moment, we want to be doing stuff better 6 months from now. And that goes from beer quality to employment practices to just creativity. Yeah, you know, the in beer, it's so capital intensive that it's tough to make mistakes. But you need to fail fast and fix everything so that you're hopefully better a year from now than you were a year ago. And that was a rambling answer. I'm just having fun drinking beers with you guys right now.
Awesome. So first off, awesome location to open up in. I've spent so many drunken nights, both in Logan Square and in Lincoln Park. I wish you were around in the early 2000s because it would have been a lot more fun. But you really kind of caught my attention with the self-distribution and mentioning you have over 400 accounts and being in sales too, just like you are. Who did the sales to get out to where you're at being self-distroed? Was it you or what was the approach? And did you get pushback on that?
So the first year that we opened, the first couple months, I was the only sales rep. I was the only delivery driver. And we realized that that wasn't going to scale very well. So as quickly as we could, we hired a guy named Jake, who is now our brand director, but started as a sales rep. To be out doing more sales, and it still didn't make sense to hire another driver. So I continued doing sales and working out of my pocket. We wouldn't have been able to do it without smartphones. But the two of us working on growing accounts and me continuing to do sales. And at that point, we were still draft only. We hadn't bought a canning line. So that was 2016, 2018. We bought a canning line, and that changed the business to where we needed another sales rep. And so now there's three of us who are working on. I still keep a book of accounts, and then there are two other reps keep accounts where we're visiting them as often as we can, getting samples out, showing them whatever is new, and then two distribution drivers.
Nice. Now, did you get a lot of pushback at first trying to be a new guy in the industry and selling beer, especially if you were draft only? It had to be a little bit of competition to get tap lines, that sort of thing.
You know, we've always been pretty lucky that our beer has never been the issue. I've never really had an instance with a buyer where they're like, I don't like your beer. It tends to be more like I don't have room for it. Which is great. I'm thankful for that. I can handle those objections. If we just had bad beer, then it would be a whole different story, and we'd probably have to pack up and figure out something else to do. I'd start selling hot dogs again. It's a competitive industry, no doubt. But if you build good relationships, if you stand by your product and fix any issues that may be out there, that's really the heart, I feel like, of selling beer. Especially starting draft only was a decision on our part because we see draft as a marketing opportunity. That's where you're getting all of your initial trial. You don't get initial trial selling four packs. You get initial trial, somebody, you know, the bartender's excited about something. That's who's really selling your beer. And then they try Ride or Die for the first time. And they're like, oh, you know what? Yeah, this four pack looks kind of cool on the shelf. Let me buy this. We also, being self-distro is an advantage in a lot of ways where we can service accounts better than, at this point, Chicago basically has two major distributors. There's a couple of smaller ones, but there's, you know, the Miller distributor and the Anheuser distributor. And a couple of, you know, crafty distributors. And I think that we're seen in a similar light to the crafty distributors in Chicago. But bars actually like that, which can be an advantage where it's like, I don't want to have the same beer that Bennigan's has, that TGI Fridays has. I want it. This is an easy way for me to show our value. So we've done really well at restaurants, especially who are putting so much effort into their food that they want to, you know, be putting effort into their beer. And the way to do that is to work with local craft breweries that care a lot about quality.
Now I'm taking a look at some of the beers you have right now. And I noticed one thing that really caught my eye and that you have a Nitro Pub Ale currently on tap. Yeah. You know, that's not something you see too often, especially on Nitro. You'll see it if they have cask and beer engines and such, but you won't see things really outside of stouts, maybe a strong ale at most places. What made you decide to go that route with not a stout, not a heavier beer on Nitro?
That's such a fun project. And that's brand new. I'm glad you brought that up. We have not done a lot of beer on Nitro before. We've done a couple of special projects. And it's, we actually haven't done any draft only projects since before the pandemic. So this is the first beer that we're releasing in, you know, the past 2 years, that's draft only. But we had been having a lot of fun making classic British styles. So we did an ESB, like I said, we did an 80 shilling, we did dry Irish stout. We've just done a series of like classic, classic English styles. They all have sort of pub related names like Pub Culture, Open Tab was one, and, you know, so on and so forth. So this was sort of related to that project where, like, we love the flavors that we're getting from these beers. And also related, Beer Temple is a local craft beer store that's, you know, about a mile away from our brewery. They have a cask that they'll just give to a brewery to fill up. So we've been filling that up with all of our classic English styles. We'll fill it up in process so that it's naturally carbonated. And we've honestly, the first time that we delivered it to them, we were like, we haven't done this in a while. So I'm going to show up to your bar with a check. So if this doesn't work, I want to drink the first pint of this. And if this doesn't work, I'm buying this back from you right now. And they were like, oh yeah, that's fine. Like, let's just try it. And I always price that really low so that hopefully we can get it to like a $5 pint, sell through it within a week. The last one I think was on tap for 4 days and we kicked a whole pin or a whole cask. Yes. But we were doing that project a little more and we were like, this is great. Like, these beers taste really great. They're a lot of fun. And then, you know, we came to the same realization that Guinness did whatever 200 years ago, that the way to do this for most bars is that don't have a beer engine with a breather on it is to make a nitro beer. And that's how you get this. So we decided it would be fun to have a draft only beer that would drive people into our bar accounts. It's something that you can't bring home. You have to go out to your accounts to drink this beer, and you have to go to certain accounts because, I mean, the amount of people that have a nitro line at this point in time is almost no one. So we made just our minimum batch size is 20 barrels. We made 20 barrels of it. We nitrogenated it, made sure it poured well through our bar, and then started sending it out to our bar accounts and just called it Hopewell Pub Ale. We brought in Maris Otter for the malt. It's East Kent Goldings on the hops, so just like classic ingredients that always worked before and they'll continue to work well. and it's been a lot of fun selling it because it's like, you know, it's the same reason that this beer tasted good 300 years ago is the same reason that it tastes good right now. It wouldn't really make sense to make a stout because you can buy a really good nitro stout. It's imported from Ireland. And it would, like, obviously the two that I see on those lines are Guinness and Left Hand's milk stout. And so I guess we're going after those lines, which those lines haven't seen a lot of competition in the way that IPA or Pilsner lines have, but it's been, we've only had it out for like a week and certain people are very excited about it. And I'm interested in how many people will continue to be excited about it. Jake, who I mentioned earlier, is very bullish on it. He thinks that it's going to take over all of our production. And I think that that's just because he's one of the guys who's going to be really excited about it. Probably all the guys on this call are going to be excited about drinking a traditional British nitro mild ale.
I'll tell you, it's hard to find in a lot of places. So yeah, if it was something that was going on around here, like it was distributed, I'd be like, yeah, I have to go drink this because, you know, they are few and far between. We've talked about it before, you know, things like even like an ESB or like an English Dark or an English Dark Mild, they're just hard to find. They're just not as popular. And, you know, you really do kind of want them at least minimum on nitro or directly out of a cask because otherwise, you know, it kind of takes away from what it's supposed to be. So, you know, a lot of people will get excited if that is our style. So you brought up the stouts and, you know, competing with Guinness, Left Hand and that. I'm curious because I was looking at some of the beers you have here. I don't see anything barrel aged. Do you have a barrel aging program?
Our current barrel aged program is all wild beer.
Okay.
So we actually just won a medal at Illinois has the Festival of Barrel Aged Beers, FOBAB. So we just won a silver medal for our barrel aged wild sour called Arrow of Time Blend 2. But breaking news, this might be the exclusive here, but we just put our stout for next year in some 4-year Heaven Hill barrels.
Oh boy.
So next year, 2022, will be our first time, you know, all things going well, that we release a bourbon barrel aged beer. And I'm really excited about that. The base beer is already tasting good. We basically have only so much bandwidth. Like I mentioned earlier, I think we only have 14 people that work at the brewery, including the front of house. And we just hired another brewer, which was an addition to the team. And he was excited about barrel aged beer. And we're like, well, if you're excited about it, if you think that we have something to say in this space, then we should do it. We never want to do anything if we don't feel like we have our perspective on it. But as soon as we have our perspective on it, then I think it's worth doing. And in general, our perspective tends to be that we're trying to make bright, clean, inviting beer. And clean might be a funny word because I just said we made wild barrel-aged beer. But I think even in that, it sort of carries through where you're trying to make something that's approachable, clean, well-balanced, nuanced, and has a perspective the whole time.
Well, before we continue, Nick decided to join us. We appreciate it.
Oh, hey.
It.
Hey, Nick.
Having a little troubles today.
You know what? Technology just sucks, man. It just sucks. I hate technology.
Well, yeah, we should just get rid of it.
What are you drinking to get rid of that technology?
I'm drinking, I think this is day 11 of the German Advent calendar beer.
Sounds like you're behind.
I am behind.
We talked about the rule for that.
I know. And then I'm also drinking
day 12.
A one of a kind, never to be bought ever again.
Oh boy.
From Sellerman's.
Ah, Moscow Miel.
Moscow Miel.
Nice.
What I bought the two. I bought the two last remaining 8-packs at one of the local shops nearby here, and this is the first one I've had.
There's some in that fridge right there. That stuff's gonna set up.
R.I.P. Sellerman, save me one for next time I make it out there.
I think
We got you.
So welcome. We appreciate obviously you coming in. It's the original crew, guys. It's the original three to finish off the year. I have a really interesting question that I'd love your perspective on, just because when you're selling in Chicago, just like you're selling in Michigan, the competition is ridiculous and there's a lot of good beer out there. How do you, as a salesperson, because I mean, people can taste your beer, but that doesn't put the beer on tap. How do you get that beer on tap? How do you take it to the next level and get that? I always say, like, you know, skew on the shelf, but how do you get that tap handle to say Hopewell?
Yeah, no, that's different at every account, right? So it depends on what you're talking about. Are you talking about a permanent tap handle? Because that's a lot more coveted. That takes a lot more time and relationship.
Permanent tap handles are, you know, probably near impossible these days just because of how many breweries out there are distroing in just Chicago, let alone breweries that are coming into Chicago.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say probably a third of our draft volume, maybe half, is on a permanent tap handle. And that's our year-round beers. And it's how we organize our portfolio, where we have four beers that we make year-round. We make our pils, which I think is the best pils in Chicago. We make our pale ale, a year-round IPA called Going Places, which I've actually prepared and have. And we send that one to Michigan. And then Light Beam, which is our hazy IPA. And so those are ones that if you're working with a restaurant, they want to print menus for the season. And those are ones that they can count on. We're keeping those four fresh all of the time because freshness is king with beer. You want to figure out how you're going to get people fresh beer that they're going to pour through while it still tastes good. But then outside of that, we're rotating a ton of new stuff because the other half the volume, maybe two thirds, is all accounts that want to buy a new thing every single time. And so in those accounts, that's where we're experimenting with like the ESB and the all the different hazy IPAs and the sour beers and the quick sours, and any of those are ones that they want whatever's new. So in that case, they want to taste it. And then they're like, that's good. Let me buy it. I'll put it on this line. And those are ones that you just, you know, you need to sell to enough spots that you have a home for everything. And we try to keep our portfolio diverse enough that we have kind of something from everyone or for everyone. We always have a hoppy beer. We always have a specialty lager. Last year we released 8 pilsners that were all unique, had a unique take on them. So First Pils is always around for if people just need a pils that's always fresh and going to be on their line. But then our latest one was pre-prohibition style pils, which had flaked corn, a little bit higher alcohol, just like a different perspective on the same style. So that's kind of how we approach it. It's two-tiered. It's either permanent lines, or if it's not a permanent line, they're not ordering two of the same keg. You need to keep on offering something new. And you got to smile at them. You got to be nice. And the beer needs to be good. People don't, we're 5 years old now. And so people who have tried our beer, you know, in the last year or two, we've gotten to a point where people don't really need to taste our beer anymore. They're just like, oh, Hopewell fruited sour. It's going to be good. Let me bring that in. Hopewell hazy IPA. I trust that. Let me bring it in. Hopewell pills. Definitely bring that in. And the thing that struck me coming from out of the industry, I was more in like the grocery side of things. And in that, people are really interested in numbers. Outside of the beer industry, people are very interested in numbers and like, how much is this going to make me? How much is this? In the on-premise, especially side of the industry, it's so romantic. It's exactly how you want it to be. It's like exactly how you think it might be when you're, in my experience, when you're like homebrewing and you're like, people are going to love this idea I have. It can be so romantic where people do literally taste something and they're like, oh, I got to find a home for this. Yeah. Send me a sextil of that. And it can be so relationship based. Like I said, they need to trust your company. They need to trust your brand, but they really trust you personally in some cases, which is fun. Like they're running a business too. They need to be buying stuff that is making them money at the end of the day. If it's not pulling through, that's not good for me because then people are drinking old Hopewell, and that's not good for them because then that line's not making them money.
So that brings up a good question here. Are there any styles or what kind of beer have you made so far that hasn't been a success? Has there been anything that has been like, just kind of like people didn't like it, gave that bad impression? Have you had anything like that come up so far?
You know, I guess we've been lucky with the beers that are less successful because the ones that move a little slower, one that comes to mind is we made a smoked Helles called Smokin'. And we did an event at Beer Temple. I guess I'll keep calling out Beer Temple, but that's one of my locals. That's a spot that I go to all the time. But we did an event where we watched The Mask. And my idea was that every time that Jim Carrey said smoking, we would drink.
Oh, boy.
And I was like, oh, this is great. Like, we're not going to come up for air. Turns out he only says it like 3 times in the whole movie.
Oh, what a backfire.
but the style aged really well. So that's why I say we're lucky. It's like if a smoked lager is something that doesn't sell super well, like at least it'll still taste pretty good at 4 months. you know, compared to like if we had a hoppy beer that didn't sell too well. And honestly, like if we've had trouble with something before package, we've got a lot of steps in our process where we taste it before it goes into package. Like we'll do the diacetyl test. We've pulled beer because it, early in our brewery, because we didn't have enough checks in place, and there was bad beer, and so we got to buy it back and give them something good. But in terms of just like a style that didn't work out, we've been lucky because the slow movers have been things like a smoked lager or a wild ale that's pretty much bulletproof. But if it's something that just doesn't hit, then we'll dump it. I'd rather have something on draft or something in a spot on a shelf that's moving than just try and like keep it there. Like we'll buy it back and change them out with something that's actually going to move. It's better to sell beer than to just have beer on someone's inventory.
Now, Ken just sent me a message. He wants to know if you've made any type of alt beer as of yet, and if not, are you planning on doing it soon?
That's a fantastic idea. We actually, that was a home, the last time I made an alt was in our homebrew days. And it was the homebrew day that my dad and my godfather were like, this is so cool that you guys are getting into homebrewing. You know, we actually like beer. And they came and stayed at our house in the Urbana-Champaign area. So we were in a house in Urbana in Illinois when we were in college. Can't believe my dad stayed there because it was a horrible place. And we homebrewed an alt. And I don't even remember the name of it, but I know that my dad still has a bottle of it in his fridge. Which I don't know what occasion he's waiting for to open it, because it wasn't that good when we drank it fresh. So it's definitely not good 15 years later. But that's the last time we brewed an alt. Coming up in terms of traditional styles, we do have a Kolsch. So I guess I'd argue a Kolsch and alt are, you know, of the same sort of family. And this will be our first Kolsch that we're ever making. And we don't have an alt on the schedule, but I love the idea.
See, guys, you know, it's going to be the year of the alt beer. I've been saying that since we started.
Are you calling? I'm writing that down because
the
I don't
year
know.
Of the alt beer.
I mean, I've been hoping for it. It's going to overtake IPAs 2022.
Yeah,
is
I'm it, ready.
Is that,
I can't
is
wait.
That our? Is that our first better on draft bold ass prediction?
I mean, that's I don't even know if that's a bold ass prediction. That's
just you talking out of your ass. That's
well, see, guys, see, it's the year of the alt. There's five of them out there now. Let's go.
You have yeah,
the amount of alt beers in the United States by craft brewers is going to increase by 100%. It goes from 5 to 10.
Hey, I would be so happy for that.
Look, I'm not knocking the style. It's a good style. You know, I just we've had this discussion before. So.
Yeah. Can we have people's predictions of it being the year of the lager come true first?
Yeah. Anything like, besides New England IPAs. So yes,
I feel like every single year, everyone predicts like next year is going to be the year of the lager. And I think there's always been a reason why it hasn't. Like it was either hard sodas became the thing because everyone was like, everyone
yeah, those died
it.
Out pretty quick. Yeah.
Everyone wants it to be the easy drinking, crisp, lower ABV beers as the option. That's why everyone always says lagers or pilsners. And then like it was the hard sodas, and then it was black IPAs one year just like showed up and left, and then it was New England IPAs, and now hard seltzers. Like the amount of reasons why we haven't gotten to the year of the lager. But I think I definitely have seen a lot more pills out there than normal. When I'm going out to breweries, I'm seeing a lot more, and not like lazy pills, I want to call them, which is the Budweiser offshoots, like, oh, here's your yellow beer just to make like really, really good pills or lagers out there that people, you know, are putting a little more effort into it instead of just trying to make a, you know, an adjunct lager to suffice for whoever, because I think less and less people are going to breweries knowing that, you know, how do I want to put this to make it sound as nice as it is? Breweries don't need to make the adjunct lager anymore because people aren't going there and getting surprised. Like, oh my God, right. you don't have a Bud Light? No, it's...
Yeah, well, and like, when's the last time that you were at a beer fest and somebody said, like, I don't like IPAs, they're too bitter? You know, like, remember when that was...
I mean, I say that all the time.
But like, what IPA is bitter anymore?
I do not like many IPAs already.
So we see on the pills side, and we're probably a bit of an anomaly, but we do sell a lot of lager. We sell a lot of pilsners, and so for example, like our two top core brands, we have our Ride or Die, which is a pale ale. Also, you don't see a lot of pale ales. But our pill, and that's our top brand. And then our second brand is First Pills. But if you look at it, Ride or Die is almost all package. It's like 90% package, 10% draft. First Pills is 50-50. So where people are drinking pilsners is on premise. They're not necessarily, you know, spending the craft beer prices to drink it at home. They're spending the craft beer draft prices to drink it at a bar. And I think that the next revolution in craft beer is going to be the service side, where you're pouring it perfectly with perfect foam, which is something we put a lot of effort in our tap room. It takes almost 5 minutes to pour our pilsner on purpose, because we're kind of doing the original Michael Jackson three pour, where you build this really lovely, floofy meringue foam on top. And it's a completely different experience than drinking a Budweiser. It's not the same thing at all, which we also did at Collect. So bringing it back to Michigan, at Collect, we did a tap takeover. We had two pilsners in a five-beer tap takeover, which I was like, that's just so cool. We had our Midwest Pils, which had local ingredients, and then we had First Pils, which is our year-round pilsner. And with First Pils, they were doing the three pour, the slow pour sort of thing, where it takes a little bit longer to serve it. It takes a little bit longer before you're going to get to drink it. And maybe you want to order another beer with it so that you can drink that while you're waiting for your perfect pilsner. And I think that that's kind of the future of how we can sell a really lovely pilsner to people and tell them why it's not a $4 beer at a bar. It's seven, it's eight, it's whatever it costs, because it's better. It's a better experience. And it kind of brings it to the same reason. Like, why don't you make cocktails at home? You go to a bar because the bartender is better at it than you are, and they've got all the tools. And it's different than pouring beer from a can. And so I think that that's maybe the future of lager. Like, lager's the top beer brand, excluding, like, outside of craft, lager's the top for a reason, because it's drinkable, it's lovely, and I think that in craft we need to also recognize the craft of the service to help push that forward and talk to people about why craft lagers and craft pilsners or import lagers and pilsners are better.
I've always been a pro industry type person, promoting the industry. And one of the things I've always seen is when people go to these craft cocktail bars, they get upset because it takes a damn long time for the cocktail to be made. Do you really think that Americans are going to have the ability to wait that long for a beer? Cause they're just going to be like, why don't you just pour the beer into the glass? You know, you put 45 degree angle, you top it off and you go. Like, that's how are you going to sell that point to customers, telling them it's going to taste better when they just want the beer?
I think it depends. So I think craft beer doesn't need to be for everybody. Like, I think that it needs to be available for everybody. I think we need to welcome everybody into what we're doing, but I don't think that we need to compromise the quality or like rush to make something that's automatically accessible to what people expect. So I think in the instance of that, a slower beer is almost like the Chili's thing of selling the sizzle. It's like, this is an experience of why you're here. It's the same way that craft cocktails are not something that you expect to see at Applebee's. Like you're expecting to see
Dollar Long Islands.
Yeah, Dollar Long Island.
Dollaritas, yeah.
Or rum and cokes, honestly. Like rum and coke is a cocktail. You know, rum and coke is a cocktail. But it's different than like a lovely Manhattan that you could get at a great cocktail bar. I think that we need to be leaning into what's great about what we're doing. Like I have no interest in ever being the IPA at a chain restaurant. That's just like not what we're doing at all. We're talking to people who are interested in food and beverage. Now, I think that craft beer also gets segmented into only talking to beer people. So to contradict myself, like we don't need to only be talking to, you know, people who look like the four of us, just like bearded guys like us. But the room to grow is in the people who are interested in wine, the people who are interested in food, the people who are interested in like thoughtfully consuming local food. That's why like we're a small brewery. I have no interest in ever being a brewery that's like sold at Meijer, because I don't think that we compete well in that. That's gone. That's Goose Island. That's whatever fake sort of craft beer that is. Like we should be focusing in on what makes us great.
Well, I tell you what, we could probably do an entire podcast series just talking to you and asking questions. I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to chat. As we end the show, we always decide, you know, we always ask one final question before we, you know, give you the floor to sell your product, tell us where you can get it. So we're going to start with Dan. Dan, what is your final question for Jonathan here?
All right. So you're up in a beer chugging contest against Kent.
Why is it always against me?
Because it's more fun that way.
Well, it's more enjoyable to listen to.
Yeah.
You're going to win if he's not drinking.
So pretend he is. So you have to choose a beer for both him and you. What beer are you giving him and what are you drinking to ensure that you win?
Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh. That's a great question.
That's a good question.
He's going to be giving me some sour that he's got. Or
whatever the strongest IPA is.
I could get through an IPA, a sour on the other, a wild ale, like something that's just like really, really like pungent on the tongue.
Yeah. Well, so since I like you, I'm gonna pick something that I would also enjoy drinking, because I'm not just gonna give you like a paint thinner sort of sour beer. Let's do. I just picked this up. I don't think it's in Michigan, but Chicago has a brewery called Beguile, and they have a beer called Imperial Pajamas. And I was just drinking one of their cans of a maple syrup Imperial Pajamas. So I would give you that because that is, you know, like a 10% thick beer, and I would be drinking our beer. Hopewell's Cruising Speed Helles, which is our summer Helles beer. And I would crush you in that competition.
So I actually, fun fact, I have had Imperial Pajamas from Beguile because I accidentally stumbled on Malt Row a few years ago and got the opportunity to try one of many beers. Definitely got an Uber back to my car, not to my car, excuse me, back
to your car,
back to my hotel, but the car was the next morning. Yeah, that was one of those nights where I got up from like the third bar and I'm like, we're continuing this journey on foot. And this was, what sucks is this was before like the birds were really big and like getting around on scooters where I could have just probably hopped from,
Bard, because that would end easier. Well.
Oh, jeez, yeah, probably. that was definitely on my trip for sure. Nick, what's your final question here for Jonathan?
Okay, what beer? So we got New Year's Eve coming up. This is our last show before New Year's Eve. I'm sure you've got plans, party, hang out with family, friends. What beer are you bringing to your New Year's Eve party that is not Hopewell Brewing? What are you bringing?
Wow, that's a fantastic question. Let's see. I am bringing Rothouse Pils. So Rothouse Pils, it's a like Bavarian, like Black Forest style pils. I know you can buy it at Western Market because I saw a stack of it the last time I was in Detroit. I think they had it at Plato and you know, like all of the good beer stores around there. But that is something that during the pandemic, I was just drinking by the case. I was just, you know, drinking the heck out of it. The bottles are beautiful. They're foil wrapped on the top. And they don't need to be because the beer's so good. It's just this like lovely German Black Forest style pils. It's spicy and dry. And I think that it's one that if you're bringing it to a family gathering with people who aren't craft beer people, they will drink that and say, this is way better than anything I've ever had.
All right. There we go.
All right, so my final question, I want you to set yourself up with a goal for 2022. Not a resolution. A resolution means you need to change something. I want you to set yourself up with a goal.
Now, Ken, is this a personal goal or is this a Hopewell Brewing goal?
It's going to be for Hopewell Brewing.
Hopewell Brewing.
It might be for him, but it's for Hopewell
Brewing. You're right. Okay.
A lot of my goals are Hopewell Brewing goals.
What is a goal you want to set up for a collaboration you want to make in 2022?
Ooh.
Wow.
Because you guys said you were doing a lot of collaborations.
We are. We have a couple in the works right now with local breweries. So I know that we are planning on working with Cruz Blanca, which is a local brewery in the West Loop. We're planning on working with a couple others that haven't come to fruition yet, but both in Chicago. But for this context, I will say my goal would be to collaborate with. Do you guys know the guys at Sidepole?
We do not. That's not a Michigan brewery.
They are trying to open in Detroit. And one of them works at Collect. And I've met them the past couple times that I've been in Detroit. Actually, they came to our event in Grand Rapids at the Sovereign the last time I was out there a couple weeks ago. And they are some of the best dudes. I haven't had any of their beer because they're not open yet. But if they can get open in the next year, I'm setting my goal for them to get open and us to make a collaboration lager together.
I'm curious. So we're really into I'm well versed into the breweries that are opening in the state of Michigan. We actually have a map app called the Michigan Brewery Map app. That's free.
I was looking at that. That's cool.
Free for breweries to be on. We just added Beer Fest, so you can see all the beer fests that are going to be coming up in Michigan. And you can also see all the upcoming breweries. And I'm actually looking at the list right now, and not just like the map app. Like I have the list in front of me. And regarding Detroit, we know about Full Measure, which is going to be opening up in the Eastern Market area here shortly. I know Little Biscuit definitely had a hiccup. I don't think they're opening anymore. Same with Nain Rouge. I see Black Bottom, which has been opening up for a bit, and Batch. So I do not have Sidepole on my list.
I was talking to Elliot Hoffman, was one of my guys that I was talking to there. And so that this is helping me realize that that dream of doing a collab with these nice dudes that I was chugging beers with to bring them a little bit of a signal boost on your pod.
For sure. Obviously I've got A little bit of information now pulled up for their Instagram, and it looks like I got Elliot's LinkedIn, so I'll be able to see a little bit more for sure. But that's gonna do it for better. I'll go on.
Outside of that, I'm sorry to take a little bit more time.
Yeah, no,
if
okay.
We don't get open, I feel like I have to bring up another brewery. So I will throw out there if they don't want to do a collab with us or can't get open. A collab with Rod House would be great. A nice little 400-year-old brewery.
Well, that's going to do it. Better on Draft Podcast, episode 276 in the books, Hopewell Brewing. Where can they find you over in Chicago? And then throw us some of the names of the accounts again here in Michigan.
So in Chicago, we're self-distributed. So if you're in Chicago and don't see us at your local, just tell them to order and we'll send a truck over right away. But then in Michigan, Collect is a great supporter of our brewery. 8 Degrees Play-Doh specifically has a lager line of Hopewell. So on draft at 8 Degrees Play-Doh, you can always try whatever the fresh Hopewell lager is. Western Market sells a lot of our beer, especially our wild ales. And then they have cans in the cooler. Off the Wagon. Harux and Grand Rapids if you're not in the Detroit area. So I'll just throw those out just as like ones that I've seen when I was there a couple weeks ago.
Perfect. Well, that's going to do it. Once again, thank you so much for joining us. We hope you have a wonderful holiday season. And no matter what you think of your beer, we think it's better on draft. Have a good night.
Cheers, guys.